Thank you very much for inviting me to talk and to make me come down from the fourth floor to the theater. So in this talk, I will describe the tidally symmetries and dualities of abelian topological field theories. And the work I will describe, I will summarize, is work that I did with my student Diego Del Mastro that appeared in this paper, and also some ongoing work. And essentially what I want to do in this talk, since also it's the first of the conference, the main thing I want to do is just to highlight some of the main ideas that go behind answering this kind of basic question about what are the symmetries and dualities of topological field theories, provide you some examples, and then you can find many more details if you're interested in the literature. Yeah, but before I start, I also wanted to take the opportunity to just take a moment to remember our colleagues who tragically passed doing at least what they loved. And I mean, this talk is dedicated to them. Okay, so what is the subject of this talk, or what's the goal of this talk? We will ask, in a sense, a very basic and fundamental question in quantum field theory in the context of topological field theories. And that problem, even this problem, is a little bit too hard to answer in general. So what we're going to ask more specifically is, what are the symmetries of abelian topological quantum field theories? These are the simplest topological field theories that you can have. This will include, as a particular example, the simplest of all Chern-Simons theories, U1 Chern-Simons theory at level k. So you could imagine this theory, U1 level k Chern-Simons theory, has been studied for decades, and there have been thousands and thousands of papers on it. How could you possibly say anything new about U1 level k Chern-Simons theory? And what we will see is that by following your nose, we will see that there is a very rich structure of symmetries that underlie this very simple topological field theory. And then this same technique will be generalized to an arbitrary topological field theory. It turns out that answering this question is deeply connected with some elements of number theory. So in order to understand what are the symmetries of these theories, this problem can be mapped into a kind of a number theoretic style problem. So there's an interesting connection between the symmetries of these theories and number theory that I will touch on a little bit during the talk. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit. So it's the first talk, so I will start very elementary and just say very kind of motherhood and apple pie things about symmetries. So of course, symmetries play a pivotal role in our description of nature. In classical physics, we use symmetries to generate new solutions. And in quantum physics, symmetries constrain observables and provide selection rules. Okay. A very foundational paper in quantum mechanics showed that all symmetries in quantum mechanics are implemented in the Hilbert space either by a unitary operator or an anti-unitary operator. So this is how symmetries are implemented in quantum mechanics. And the one that we usually ignore when you first read about symmetries because you think this is too complicated, the anti-unitary ones, are usually associated to some notion of time reversal transformation. And the reason it is anti-unitary is that the Schrodinger equation has an I dt, and essentially that's the reason that the transformation is anti-unitary. So why am I talking in this conference? So I think the only reason I'm talking in this conference, so this will be my excuse for being here, is that symmetries in quantum field theory in general are realized by invertible topological defects. So these are defects that implement the action of a symmetry on your operators. And depending on the dimension or codimension of your topological defect, they will correspond to different types of symmetries that act naturally on local operators or line operators or et cetera, et cetera. In this talk, I will describe the symmetries associated to what are called zero-form symmetries, the conventional symmetries you find in textbooks, essentially because the problem for the symmetries that naturally act on lines it was already completely understood, okay? Unlike the problem of the conventional symmetries. Okay. So symmetries are great to organize your physics, but even more powerful are when you couple. So if you have a theory with a global symmetry and you couple it to a background gauge field, that system may acquire a Tuft anomaly. And these TUF anomalies are very powerful because they are one of our few lampposts for non-perturbative dynamics. So even if you have a system that's very strongly coupled, if you're able to compute at short distances the TUF anomalies, and you have a guess for the infrared dynamics, and you can compute the TUF anomalies, at least you can check whether your proposal is wrong. You cannot prove that it's right, but at least you can prove whether it's wrong. And the reason is that these TUF anomalies for global symmetries are randomization group invariants. And the reason that's the case is that essentially anomalies are essentially topological in nature, and therefore they don't depend on the length scale, and the anomalies are the same at short distances and large distances. Okay, so how do we usually find symmetries in quantum field theory? So a sufficient condition for a transformation G to be a symmetry of your system is that it preserves the Lagrangian, or the action, more precisely. Okay? If it preserves the action, then it's a symmetry, and from it you can derive selection rules or constraints on the correlation functions that are usually denoted as word identities. So symmetry, constraint, correlation functions via the word identities. And heuristically, the word identities look like that. It tells you that the correlation function or the transformed operators under your symmetry are this correlation function if the transformation is unitary, or you have a cookie complex conjugation if it's anti-unitary, because anti-unitary things have complex conjugation in them. So this is the usual way in which we fish for symmetries in quantum field theory. We look at the Lagrangian, or the equations of motion, and try to determine what transformations leave those invariant. But actually, and this will be the main theme of this talk, this is only a sufficient condition. It's not a necessary condition. It is possible to have quantum systems endowed with symmetries that are not visible classically, in the sense that the transformation does not preserve the action, but that nevertheless obey the word identities. And these are perfectly good symmetries of your quantum field theory. They preserve all the correlation functions as if it was as a symmetry should do. Okay? And we will call these symmetries that are symmetries of all the correlation functions but not symmetries of the action by the word quantum symmetries. And they will play a central role in this talk. Okay, so now let me tell you a little bit of why we were interested in this problem of studying symmetries of these topological field theories. Okay. So there are many, many reasons. Let me just tell you a few of some of the background. So topological field theories in 2+1 dimensions play a central role both in physics and mathematics. They obviously enter head on in describing gapped quantum phases of matter. Famously, the integer quantum Hall effect and the fractional quantum Hall effect. Also, more recent years, there was a revolution in the study of topological field theories or topological phases of matter that was kind of triggered by the discovery of topological insulators and superconductors. And this has really been a very fertile area of cross-fertilization between condensed matter physics or many-body physics, particle physics, and Akala-Nakli mathematics. In order to study some of these things, you really have to understand in a lot of detail anomalies in a more mathematical language. Okay. The motivation that was closer to my heart was in trying to answer another basic question about quantum field theory. Imagine I give you a dynamical gauge theory with a gauge group G and some quark content, and you ask, what is the low energy infrared dynamics of this gauge theory? So broadly speaking, and this is not a theorem, but there are essentially two things that can happen when you study the low energy dynamics of a gauge theory. You can either flow to a conformal phase that describes a two-dimensional by a conformal field theory, or you can have a gap phase that's described by a topological field theory. Okay? And obviously, and as I already described, symmetries and TUF anomalies play a pivotal role in giving us some constraints on what can happen in studying such non-perturbative problems. In particular, two plus one dimensional gauge theories are strongly coupled in infrared, and we don't really have any tools to study what happens in infrared other than this kind of one of the things we can do is try to use the symmetries and TUF anomalies to constrain what's happening. So an example of a system, a QCD theory So as you do Young Mills with a quark in the adjoint representation, this would be an example of a theory that you start with a conventional gauge theory with no Chern-Simons term, but nevertheless, due to non-perturbative effects, at least conjecturally in the infrared, you develop a U1 Chern-Simons theory at level 2 together with a massless fermion. And in order to answer such question, it plays an important role to understand what are the symmetries of such topological field theories. Okay? Also, topological field theories enter as domain walls and defects in 3+1 dimensional gauge theory. So you can have multiple vacua in your 3+1 dimensional gauge theory. And you can ask what is the domain wall interpolating between two vacua. And one can argue that in examples that the domain wall that lives there is again a topological field theory in 2+1 dimensions. And of course, there's an innumerable number of applications that topological field theories have had into mathematics, starting possibly with the work of Witten. Okay, I don't need to go there. So this was just topological field theories in general. What about symmetries in topological field theories? The study of phases of matter with symmetries have led to all kinds of different classification schemes for the topological phases of matter. And depending on, and essentially, the way you do that is you study the emergent symmetries that appear in the emergent topological field theories that describe these, say, lattice systems. And depending on how trivial or non-trivial the topological field theory that you get in the infrared is, condensed matter colleagues give these phases of matter different names, SPT phases, SET phases. We don't have to get into the details of that, but the thing that is kind of governing the classification of the phases is the symmetry that you impose on your system. So therefore, understanding the symmetries of a topological field theory is a kind of a necessary step in order to study concretely these things. Despite this, actually, very little is concretely known about symmetries of topological field theories. So in this talk, I want to kind of find the simplest possible entry to this problem and ask for the simplest topological field theories, what are their symmetries, and what are their Tuft anomalies. So that's essentially the main thing I want to do. Another thing that, of course, is very interesting in quantum field theory, both in the context of particle physics and condensed matter, is that quantum field theories are endowed with non-trivial dualities. These are two different representations of the same physics. And topological field theories are just another example of a quantum field theory. So you may ask whether topological field theories are endowed with dualities. So one of the things that we were also able to ask and answer along these lines is what are the dualities of a billion topological quantum field theories? And in this way, you discover many new types of dualities that were not known before. Okay, so now that was the kind of the background. Let's start more concretely to tackle the problem. So, what is a topological field theory? So, between friends, it's just a system that has a collection of anions or quasi-particles that have certain behavior under braiding and fusion, okay? Topological field theory is one of these subjects that can be formulated completely without discussing Lagrangians. So there is kind of a abstract characterization of what a topological field theory is, and I'm going to just give you the heuristic data that goes into the characterization of the topological field theory. This data is, of course, very closely connected to the modular bootstrap of 1+1 dimensional conformal field theories. Okay, here I'll be a bit cavalier about this. There are all kinds of subtleties, and actually I think the last word has not been said about spin topological field theories, but let me just describe the kind of the data that describes the bosonic topological field theories. So the mathematical framework that at the end of the day describes this was originated by Moore and Seiberg is what's called a modular tensor category. So what is the data? The data is, as I said, you have a collection of quasi-particles that we call anions, and they obey a certain fusion. So if you bring two anions together, they decompose into some of a finite number of anions. And these n's are the structure constants of the fusion algebra. So the fusion of the anions defines a certain fusion algebra, A. Okay. These anions carry topological spins. Essentially, they carry some spin under the rotations around the line, the world line of the particle. And actually, this topological spin, anyway, let me not say more than that. Another important piece of data of the topological field theory that it would be relevant, say, if anions are present in experiments, is to know what the braiding phases are when anion beta, say, encircles anion alpha. This defines this braiding matrix, V alpha beta. That's not enough. You have to look at the Hilbert space of multiple collections of anions, and there are non-trivial isomorphisms that you can study there that define what are called the F and R symbols. And these are not physical by themselves, because you can have local gauge transformations on your local Hilbert spaces, but this play an important role in characterizing the modular tensor category. And there are also what are called the S and T matrices. Okay. Now, this data is very highly redundant. They're not independent data, and there are what are called the Moore-Seiberg groupoid relations. So these are relations between this data that are necessary for essentially the consistency of the theory. And two of the famous ones are what are known the hexagon and pentagon identities that are obeyed by the symbols. So this would be like the abstract characterization of what a topological field theory is in 2+1 dimensions. And now what we want to ask is how do we know when we have a symmetry in a topological field theory? So let me describe this using this language. So essentially, the group of symmetries of the topological field theory is the automorphism group of the associated modular tensor category. Okay? So you have this data, and essentially what is a symmetry is something that acts on this data and preserves it, perhaps up to complex conjugation if you look at anti-unitary transformation. So a symmetry essentially is a permutation that acts on the anions, so it maps anion alpha to G of alpha. It preserves the fusion algebra, so that in formulas it means this, so you want to preserve the fusion algebra. And now, if the symmetry is unitary, it preserves the full modular tensor category data. In particular, it preserves the spin and the braiding. So it tells you that the spin of the transformed anion is the same as the spin of the original anion, and the braiding matrix is preserved. Now, here, this dot, 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 there is some nastiness here. The fusion and braiding, the fusion matrix in particular, are not gauge invariant, so in order to see whether you have a symmetry, the fusion matrix need not be preserved. It can be preserved up to local gauge transformations. Okay? So you have to take that into account. And now you can ask the same thing for an anti-unitary transformation. And then in this case, of course, it has to be a permutation that preserves the fusion algebra. But in this case, it will preserve the data up to complex conjugation. Okay? So this would be the abstract characterization that that you could use to define what you mean by a symmetry in a topological field theory. But very concretely is known about the symmetries of a given topological field theory. So in order to that, we will retreat and study the simplest, but yet very extremely rich, as you will see, extremely rich in the symmetries that they have, topological field theory, which are called abelian topological field theories. So as I said, a topological field theory is the first piece of data, if you wish, is a collection of anions. And in abelian topological field theory, all the anions are abelian. What do I mean by the abelian? Is that the fusion rules are abelian. Okay? In particular, it means that for any anion in your spectrum, there is another anion such that if you fuse the anion with the other one, you get the identity. Okay? That's essentially the definition of what you mean by an abelian anion. So alpha would be an abelian anion, and in an abelian topological field theory, all anions are abelian. Okay. Now, here is the key thing that allows us to get a handle on this problem. The thing that's remarkable about abelian topological field theories is that the entire data of the modular tensor category is completely fixed or determined by the fusion algebra, so namely how anions multiply with each other, and by the spins of the anions. Everything else is derivable from this data. This is most definitely not true in a generic topological order, but this is a true statement for abelian topological field theories. Okay. So in particular, the braiding matrix can be derived or written down once you know the spin of your anion. Another very nice thing that happens in an abelian topological field theory is the fusion algebra essentially is just a finite abelian group. And that is one important simplification. And therefore, since we're looking for automorphisms of the fusion algebra that preserves spin, essentially, what we have to do in order to study the symmetries of an abelian topological field theory, we have to look at the group of automorphisms of the finite group. So these are the transformations that permute the anions. This is the group of automorphisms of the finite group that preserves the spin, maybe up to complex conjugation. So this is the kind of problem that, so this is in the language that we will tackle and solve this problem. Okay. Another result that's important to mention is that I told you that there is this abstract characterization of topological field theory using this abstract data of modular tensor category. But it is known that any abelian topological field theory can be given an abelian Chern-Simons theory representation. But it may not be the simplest one that you would learn in the first course, but it would be almost that. Essentially, any abelian topological field theory can be given a K-matrix representation. So essentially what you take is you take a Chern-Simons theory with gauge group U1 to the N. So you have N U1 factors. A is a N component vector. And the data of the topological field theory is encoded in this matrix K, which is an integral symmetric matrix. And any topological order, abelian topological order, can be given such a representation. Even though we're not going to use Lagrangians at all, but I just wanted to connect with things that so it doesn't look so abstract. Okay, so let's study first the simplest possible Chern-Simons theory that there is, and try to see whether we find something new or interesting by following our nodes. So what is the U1 level K Chern-Simons theory? So this is the action. It's defined by this three-form ADA, and the coupling constant in this theory is K has to be properly quantized. It has to be an integer. Okay. Now, what do we know about this theory? Well, there are many things we know. Let me just tell you a few simple things. The partition function on the Toro is K, and that essentially tells you that there are K ground states when you put this theory, when you study this theory on a special manifold, which is the two Toros. Now, what are the anions in this theory? The anions in this theory are described by Wilson lines. And you can compute the spin of the Wilson line, and essentially, so alpha is an integer, is the charge of the Wilson line, so it has to be, again, properly quantized. And the spin of the anion is alpha squared over 2k. Okay. And likewise, using simple arguments, you can compute the braiding phase by essentially just computing the two-point function of Wilson lines, and the braiding phase is given by this quantity. Okay. Now, this theta, the topological spin, is related to the physical spin in this way. And the spin of the anion, and this will be important, is only defined mode 1. Essentially, the point is that an anion cannot really be distinguished from an anion with a photon floating around. And the photon has spin 1, so you cannot really distinguish, you can only distinguish things mode 1, essentially. Oops. OK, so now we have to get into some more details. What happens? There are different things that happen for when k is even and k is odd. Okay. So in K is even, there are K distinct anions that can be which can be taken to be in the fundamental domain from charge 0 to charge K minus 1, and they obey a ZK fusion algebra in the obvious way. The fusion algebra is just the sum of the charges mod K. Okay. This theory plays an important role in condensed matter physics and describes a bosonic fraction, what condensed matter people call bosonic fraction quantum Hall state, and the line alpha equals K realizes the microscopic boson that you may have in your lattice system. Okay. This is a bosonic topological field theory, which means that you can define it without any further data than I said. And the fusion algebra is obviously just ZK. When K is odd, you have to be a bit more careful. In this case, there are two K anions. And now something peculiar happens in this case. If the line alpha equals K, if you look at the formula for the spin, has essentially spin k over 2. So k over 2 for odd k is a half mod 1. Okay. And if you look at this formula and you put alpha equals k, it means that any anion, so that means that I cancel the k in the denominator, any anion is transparent when you move it around this special anion that has spin a half. Okay. But if you're sensitive to spin, the fact that you have this anion in the system is non-trivial, and you have to keep it. Okay. And this line alpha equals k, that's why we call it a transparent fermion. Okay? So where do such systems appear in physics? Famously, it appears in the 1 over k Laughlin state. And this funny transparent fermion that seems like an annoyance actually has a very clear physical meaning in that language. It realizes the microscopic electron that your piece of material has in them. Okay? Now, this theory, unlike the other one, is what's called a spinty QFT. In order to define it, you need to specify a choice of a spin structure between friends, simply because you have this transparent fermion floating around. Okay? And the fusion algebra is Z2K. Okay, so before we study what are the symmetries, let's just do what you would do if you were a student. Let's study the symmetries that you can see with the naked eye. So from the naked eye, it's obvious that for k bigger than 2, there is a classical Z2 charge conjugation symmetry that essentially sends A to minus A, which obviously leaves ADA invariant, okay? So that's an obvious symmetry of the action, and it permutes the anions in this particular way. It sends alpha to minus alpha, but since you're working mod k or mod 2k, depending on whether k is even or odd, it acts in this way. So this is a symmetry that anyone should be able to identify, okay? And it's there. So that would be and that's it. I mean, in terms of visible symmetries, symmetries of the Lagrangian, this is all that there is, unitary symmetries. Now you could try to say whether there is a time reversal symmetry, okay? Well, if you know anything, you would know that this sounds crazy because Chern-Simons theory is the prototype theory of a theory that's not time reversal invariant because it's a volume form, and the volume form obviously changes sign under time reversal. So, and indeed, the action changes sign, and therefore, U1k, you would say, does not admit any classical anti-unitary symmetries, okay? Which would feed your intuition that the volume form changes sign. So the question that we want to ask in this problem is, one, does U1 level k admit quantum time reversal symmetries or symmetries that are not obvious by staring at the Lagrangian? And two, what is the group of unitary symmetries of this theory? So in the first one is, are there things that actually both questions are there things there that were not visible to the naked eye? And the answer will be yes. And we will give a characterization of the symmetries using the arithmetic properties of the level k. So the behavior of the symmetries of Yuan Chern-Simons theory will depend very sensitively on the arithmetic properties of the level k. So let's start with the time reversal transformation, time reversal symmetries. Okay. So what did we say? We said that in the abelian topological field theory, everything is determined in all the entire data is fixed in terms of the fusion algebra and the spin. So how do we know when we have a symmetry? Well, we have a symmetry if t is an automorphism of the fusion algebra, so it preserves the fusion, and the spin is preserved up to complex conjugation. Okay. Now, what does this formula tell us? It tells us that the physical spin of the transformed anion is minus the spin of the original anion, mod 1. Okay. So now, essentially, what we have to do is can we solve these equations for U1 level k Chern-Simons theory? So let's start with the and if this is true, then the whole theory has the anti-unitary automorphism. Okay. So the first little lemma you can prove is that if you take bosonic U1 level k, which means that U1k Chern-Simons theory where the level is even, you can prove that there is no time reversal symmetry whatsoever, not even quantum one. And the way you prove it is extremely elementary. What is a necessary condition for the theory to admit an anti-unitary symmetry? It means that for every anion, there is another anion such that this equation is satisfied. So let's check it for the first anion that has charge 1. And essentially, we see that, so you have a charge 1 anion, okay? And we ask, is there an anion of charge beta such that this equation is satisfied? And essentially, the point is that 1 plus beta squared divided by 2k for k even can never be an integer, and therefore, there cannot be an anti-unitary symmetry, okay? So there are no anti-unitary symmetries for bosonic Chern-Simons theory, for even k. Now let's study spin Chern-Simons theory. So how do you build spin Chern-Simons theory? I already told you one way in which it's naturally a spin, is that if you take U1 level k and the k is odd, then the fusion algebra is Z to k and the anions take values in this set. And the transparent fermion is the anion that has charge K. Okay? Another way that you can always canonically construct a spin to QFT given a bosonic to QFT is that you can take your bosonic to QFT, U1 level K where K even, and tensor with a free, essentially a decoupled fermion. Okay? Now, the fusion algebra in this case is just ZK times Z2, and the anions in this theory are labeled by this pair alpha beta that takes values in this set. And the transparent fermion in this line, which is just the charge 0, 1, 1. Okay? In order to fish for symmetries, first we have to look for the automorphisms of the fusion algebra. And the fusion algebra, I wrote down what it is, this and this, and these are finite groups. Actually, this one is a finite abelian group that I will not describe. And for this guy, the automorphism groups of this finite group in general is a non-abelian group. But, so essentially, we have to look at the elements in the automorphism groups that map, that permute the anions. And since it's an automorphism, all that we need to care about is the action of the permutation on the generators, okay? So what we want is, for this case, that has to preserve the Z to K algebra, we have to map alpha, the charge alpha will go to a charge Q alpha, where Q is an integer, okay? And in order for this to be an automorphism, it will be important that Q is relatively prime to K, otherwise it's not an automorphism. And for this other theory, it turns out that if you look more carefully, that the automorphisms that preserve the transparent fermion are either of these two types. They act on the charge vector alpha beta in this particular way where Q again is an integer. Okay. So these are, so I looked first at the most general automorphism that preserves the fusional algebra. Now we have to look, does it preserve the spins up to sine? Okay, so now let me just walk you through this. So now we want to impose that it is a symmetry, and I already told you that everything, we only have to check that the spins obey the right equations. So let's look at the spin of the transformed anion and see whether it obeys this equation for the generators. It's an automorphism, so we only have to look at the generators. And then things break up into whether K is even or odd, and essentially all that I did is use that formula of the spin, alpha squared divided by 2K, for the trivial, for the generating line that has alpha equals 1, and the transform line that has alpha equals q, and just say that this equation is satisfied, where the arbitrary integer here is p. So for k odd, you get this equation. This is like just adding two fractions. I'm not doing anything deep here. And for k even, you get that. It turns out that these two equations can be nicely packaged into this interesting equation, pq minus q squared equals 1. So the condition is that the generating line will have a time reversal partner for k's, for levels that obey this equation. Okay? So that's the first kind of interesting connection to number theory. And then it's easy to check, I don't have my time, so let me not go through it, that if the generator, and as it had to be, if the generator obeys this equation, all anions do obey the equation. Okay? So this argument shows something that's perhaps surprising. Well, it's definitely surprising in general. It says that U1 level K, Chern-Simons theory, which is the prototype of a non-time reversal invariant theory, has a time reversal symmetry if and only if, so this is an if and only if statement, K obeys this equation, K P minus Q squared equals 1, where all elements here are integers. Okay, and there's an infinite number of solutions of this equation, and here I just wrote the first few examples. So for these values of K, U1 level Chern-Simons series, perhaps surprisingly, has a time reversal transformation. Let me tell you in a bit more concrete way what the set of time reversal theories is. Okay. It turns out that we can give a very elegant characterization. There is a very elegant characterization of the solutions of these kind of number theoretic equation that I will give you now in terms of the prime decompositions of K. So I already said that this theory is time reversal invariant if K belongs to this set, okay? Now, how do we characterize this set? How do you know whether that K is in this set or not? So there are several equivalent isomorphic ways of discussing the Ks that solve this equation. One of them is saying that K is in this set if it can be written as the sum of two relatively prime numbers, squares of two relatively prime numbers. That's one characterization. A very practical characterization is that you take K and you do a prime decomposition. Famously, you have even and odd numbers. So you decompose your prime numbers into, there's only one even prime number known as two. And then the odd prime numbers can either be 1 mod 4 or 3 mod 4, okay? So K is in this set. If all the odd primes are of Pythagorean type, these guys are called Pythagorean type, and that essentially follows from this monkey business here. So in order for K to be in this set, we require that beta is 0, so there are no prime factors of this type, only the Pythagorean ones. And you can have, at most, no factors of 2 or one single factor of 2. So this gives a complete characterization of the time reversal invariant set. Okay. Now there is a nice subset of integers that are also time reversal invariant, which are solutions to what's called the negative Pell equation, which is kp squared minus q squared equals 1. Notice the difference that here we have kp, but here is q squared. This p is a subset of t. And actually, Witten earlier had shown, and it was reproduced in a paper by Benini and collaborators, this was showed that when K is in this set, using different methods, so the way they did it is by kind of a path integral argument, had showed that when K is in this smaller set, it's, the theory is time reversal invariant. So the first thing to say is that this set, mathematicians have estimated how many, what percentage of elements in P are in T, and it's roughly, what was it, 50%, 60%, something like that. So P misses like roughly 50% of the values of P. But more interestingly, the way that we have arrived this is kind of in a different way that allows us to generalize to all essentially a billion theories. Okay. And the other thing I wanted to say is that the T invariants for this particular case, the T invariance of U1 level K when K is in this set can also be shown by essentially doing a clever change of variables in the path integral and showing that the theory of U1 at level K equals the partition function of U1 at level minus K, if and only if this. The other thing that's very important about this statement is that this is a statement, is an if and only if statement. So no one will find any other time reversal invariant U1 level K Chan-Simons theory. Okay. So you see that there is an extremely rich structure in just asking this very basic question, whether the theory admits an anti-unitary symmetry. Okay, another interesting thing is that actually there is a whole bunch of solutions. There is not only one time reversal transformation when K is in that funny set, but actually there can be a whole bunch of transformations, and there is essentially two to these W of K transformations, where W essentially is, up to factors of two, essentially is the number of distinct prime factors of K. So not only do you discover that you have a one-time reversal transformation, but there's a zoo of them, depending on the prime factors of K. Okay. Another thing that you can prove very simply from all these equations is that the time reversal algebra, when K is bigger than 2 and is in the set, is a Z4. And essentially, T squared essentially squares to the Lagrangian symmetry of your system, which is charge conjugation. While for k equals 1 and 2, since charge conjugation is essentially trivial, you get t squared, you get a Z2 time reversal algebra. Okay, so this was about anti-unitary symmetries. Let's discuss a little bit about unitary symmetries. Okay. So I already showed that with the naked eye, we discovered that the theory has a charge conjugation symmetry. Now I want to discover the quantum unitary symmetries. So now essentially what we have to do is, again, solve for the automorphisms that preserve the fusion algebra, but now preserve the spin, not up to nonsense complex conjugation. And now, using the same idea, the equation is very simple. It's this equation, okay? And now you can also, again, characterize. So that the first thing to say is that, unlike the case of time reversal symmetry, for any value of k, this solution has equation. At the very least, this equation has the solution k equals plus minus 1, p equals 0. So we recover charge conjugation. Now the question is, are there solutions that are non-trivial? Is there any solution for p different from 0? And this will be the quantum symmetries. Okay. And this very simple theory, U1 level K Chan-Simons theory, turns out to potentially have a very large group of symmetries. You can prove that the group of symmetries essentially is Z2 to the number of distinct prime factors of K. So let me give you an example of a simple theory that has a Z2 symmetry that you would not obviously have encountered if you had not thought about things this way. Take your one level 12. So that's a perfectly well-defined Chern-Simons theory. And this theory has a quantum symmetry that permutes the anions by sending anion of charge alpha to anion of charge, say, 5 alpha. That would be an example of a quantum symmetry, quantum unitary symmetry that U1 level 12 would have. It turns out that this number coincides with the number of time reversal transformations. This was not an accident. The point is that time reversal transformations can be written as a fiducial time reversal transformation times a bosonic Z2 symmetry. This is also this guy. If UI is a Z2 symmetry, this is a well-defined time reversal transformation. Another thing that you can, a nice theorem that you can prove is that I said that you can always upgrade a bosonic TQFT to a spin TQFT by tensoring with the decoupled fermion. And you can ask, is the symmetry of the spin TQFT the same or different than the original bosonic theory? Obviously, it has to include the symmetries of the bosonic theory, but it can have something more, where the fermion kind of mixes up with the original bosonic theory. And what you find is that the spin theory has an extra Z2 symmetry compared to the bosonic one if the level is a multiple of 8. OK, so this is all I have time to say about about U1 level K Chern-Simons theory. Now let me tell you some other things that you can, and here a bit more schematic, that you can say about more general abelian TQFTs. So this will be the general, I'll write down the general criterion that determines when you have a unitary and anti-unitary symmetry. So I already described that an abelian TQFT can be written as a K-matrix Chern-Simons theory of this type. Blah, 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 blah. And it's easy to compute formulas that determine the number of anions. The number of anions in this theory essentially is the determinant of the K matrix. And there are simple formulas, generalizations of the formulas that I wrote for a single U1 that you can write down to compute the spin and the braiding matrix of this general abelian Chern-Simons theory. Now, let me just give you immediately what is the criterion to determine the symmetries of this theory, okay? The most general fusion homomorphism, so now alpha is a column vector, right? I have n U1 factors, so a permutation is some, and the permutation has to preserve the quantization conditions. So the most general fusion homomorphism maps the column vector alpha to Q alpha, where Q is an n by n integral matrix, okay? Now, so now we want to know, when is this homomorphism an actual symmetry of your topological field theory? So it is a symmetry if and only if there are solutions to this equation. So where now you have to be careful, this is generalizations of the equation that I had before for integers to matrices of integers. So if you find solutions to this equation for P and Q being integral matrices, where plus or minus, plus would be for unitary symmetries, minus would be for anti-unitary symmetries. So if you solve, if you're able to find solutions to this equation and Q is invertible modulo K over the integers, then there is a symmetry, okay? Now, solutions that have P equals zero are classical symmetries. So these are symmetries that if you had good glasses, you would see by staring at the Lagrangian. But symmetries where for P is non-zero are quantum symmetries, and these are not symmetries of the Lagrangian. Again, these are symmetries that you will only see by solving the problem in the way we have solved it. Okay? And again, these equations have an extremely rich arithmetic, and it kind of gets close to the cutting edge of what kind of number theory people are able to solve efficiently, these kind of matrix equations of integers. So let me give you, instead of tell you a general theory, let me pick some examples. So some fun examples would be, there are certain class of abelian topological field theories that describe anomalies for one form symmetry that are called the minimal abelian theories. You can describe the symmetries for those. But for fun, I will take a different example that also plays a prominent role in condensed matter physics, which is I call it a ZK1 with a twist Z2 gauge theory. So if K2 was zero, this would be a standard Z2 gauge theory that can be given a continuum field theory formulation as a U1 times U1 gauge theory. Okay? And this twisting K2 is, so this can be represented by, as I said, any abelian to PQFT has a k-metric representation. This can be given a k-metric representation of this type, where the twist is this integer K2. Now, when K2 is even, this twist is someone sometimes known as the digraph Witten twist. Okay? But in general, this is the kind of theory we're discussing. So now you can ask, in this concrete theory that enters in many places in condensed matter physics, can we find, when does this theory have a time reversal symmetry? Okay. And it turns out that, again, you get an interesting cookie-looking number theoretic equation. So this theory is time reversal invariant if and only if K2 this should have been proportional, right? Yeah, proportional to, oh no, it's the same thing, okay. It's proportional to this function acting on K1. K1 was the ZK1 here. And what does this function do? You take A, you do the prime decomposition of A, and what this function do is you take all the prime factors and you eliminate all the Pythagorean ones. Okay, that gives you another integer. So if K2 is proportional to this mu of K1, then the theory is time reversal symmetric. And now in this example, you already start seeing an incredibly rich structure of symmetries. Now you can study the problem of what are the unitary symmetries, what are the anti-unitary symmetries, what is the group of all symmetries. And here, just because of time and space, I'll just give you an example of what would be the symmetries of, for example, ZK. So this would be the group of all symmetries, and this would be the group of all of unitary symmetries of ZK at level 0 and ZK at level mu k. And you can see that immediately you start getting interesting things like non-abelian groups, the dihedral group, and so on. And most of these symmetries are all quantum symmetries. So these are things that you would not have easily discovered in any other method. How much time do I have? I probably have like 2 minutes or minus 2 minutes. So, no, okay. It's time reversal symmetric. No, sorry. Yes. So we also developed, so we can generalize the ideas to the following questions. What is a symmetry? If you wish, it's an auto duality of the same theory, but you can also phrase the problem as a duality as saying that whether there is a homomorphism, there is a transformation that relates to different theories. Okay. So we developed a criterion to determine when two abelian topological field theories are dual. And this extends celebrated examples of dualities known as level rank dualities in topological field theories. So we will say that Chern-Simons theory is based on K-matrix K1 is dual, quantum dual, to Chern-Simons theory with matrix K2, if and only if this matrix equation for integer matrices is obeyed. Okay? Now, if P is non-zero, if P is zero, you could have discovered it with your naked eyes. For P is zero, this would be a non-trivial duality transformation. This would not be a transformation that you could derive from a Lagrangian transformation. And from that, you can derive, I just wrote two very simple examples of non-trivial dualities, new dualities that you can derive by solving this problem. For example, you take that Z7 at level 2, for example, is quantum dual to Z7 at level 4, and Z7 at level 3 is dual to Z7 at level 5. There's an infinite number of them. I just told you an example to show you that this is very concrete. So let me just conclude. So in this talk, we have determined that the unitary and anti-unitary symmetries of abelian topological field theories. And what we found is by studying this problem from this point of view that originally looked a bit abstract, of thinking of it as an automorphism of the modular tensor category and using the fact that, fortunately, in abelian theories, everything is determined in terms of the fusion algebra and the spin, that by analyzing this problem, you can discover a whole bunch of quantum symmetries. We have also found, using similar ideas, that there are many new topological field theory dualities. But now, important problems remain for the future. So I already, as I explained early in the talk, one thing that was very useful to us in analyzing the strong coupling dynamics of 2 plus 1 dimensional gauge theory was understanding not only the symmetries, but the Tuft anomalies for those symmetries. So one thing that we would like to do is to give a classification of the associated Tuft anomalies. This is a non-trivial problem. Anomalies given a symmetry are measured by various fancy cohomology and cobordism groups, and one needs to study them. More, if you wish, even a more basic problem is present. If you have a theory, how do you know what its anomaly is? And it turns out in the literature, essentially, almost very little is known about how to compute the anomalies of even unitary symmetries. Essentially, only very few things are known for abelian symmetries and for symmetries in which the permutation is trivial, essentially a transformation that does not permute the anions. And as you saw, all the interesting symmetries that we have here permute the anions in a non-trivial way, so there is a lot of work to be done to really construct what are called the anomaly indicators, so formulas that would determine, given your theory and given your symmetry, what is the associated Tuft anomaly associated to that symmetry. And the main point I want to finish with is that still we're learning new and elementary facts about field theories, even trivial ones like U1 level Cage and Simons theory. So thank you very much.
I should have mentioned the talks will be recorded, both audio and video. And if you ask a question, I'm supposed to throw this box to you.
I can do it. I can do it. Actually, that's the only reason I agreed to be here, to give a talk, to throw it.
This is the microphone for the question.
I'll throw it anyway. And whoever gets it has to ask a question. OK, ask a question, please. Ask a question, yeah.
So you have this anti-unitary symmetry you discovered for, let's say, level one Chan-Simon theory, which doesn't have a classical anti-unitary symmetry. How can it be realized in Emma condensable theory?
So what?
So how can this be realized? Can be realized on a microscopic lattice model in two dimensions, or maybe on the surface of some system? Or do you have any ideas how to?
Well, in order to answer whether it can be at the boundary of a system, I would need to tell you about its anomalies, right?
Right.
And so we still don't really understand what the anomalies associated to that is. What the Tuft anomalies for the time reversal symmetry. The time reversal symmetry we have here is not the standard time reversal symmetry
right. That
the people have studied, I believe.
Yes, so that's fine.
Yeah, so that still remains an open problem. And the more important problem is how do you derive anomaly indicators that tell you what the anomaly is of the theory.
But you're talking about emergent time.
No. I mean, I was just studying the topological field theory. I have not told you anything about any microscopic Hamiltonian or anything. We're studying the emergent topological field theory in the infrared.
If I may, I have one question. So you have a U1 level 8n.
8n?
Yes. Yeah, so you have a particular case. You said a spin case.
If you make it spin, you have an extra Z2 symmetry.
Yes, yeah. Is it related to the, once again, surface of a topological translator where people study U1 level 8 times Ising theory? Is your theory something like that?
I mean, no, the Ising has other non-trivial stuff in it.
Yeah, so it's not exactly electrons. They had to put a neutral pyramid, that's why.
So this Ising thing, does it have other things than a decoupled fermion or not?
So Ising fermions are decoupled from...
Okay, so then it looks similar to that.
It's similar to
yes,
that.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Should I throw? So randomly to someone.
Right.
Not in the head, possibly.
So I just have a question. If these new kind of quantum symmetries offer some kind of refinement of the current classification of SPT and SET phases, or if they already fit
into those? No, I mean, that classification does not require talking about a specific topological quantum field theory. It just needs to know about what the symmetry group is. So you don't need a specific realization. I mean, the reason it can help is that if you think your emergent system has a U1 level 12, Now you know that, okay, you thought you had a Z2 symmetry, but actually you have a Z2 times Z2 symmetry, and you have to look at the right cobordism blah, blah, blah group to know what the SPT phases are.
Thank you.
Hi. I was wondering if any of this analysis would carry over to supersymmetric current time. They're no longer topological.
Well, n equals 1 are topological. I mean, I don't know how much percentage you want to put. The minimal one, the Gugino, for example, is just an auxiliary field. So you can integrate it out and blah, blah, blah. If you make it n equals 2, then it's not topological, and then the data is not a modular tensor category. You would have to find some handle into this problem. The handle relied very heavily that the theory was topological. Which anyway, as you know, 3D n equals 2, Chern-Simons matter theories can flow to infrared to topological field theories. It would be useful in that context, but for a 3D n equals 2 theory, it's not described by a modular tensor category.
So you have no expectation?
I'm sure I think in general, all theories have much more symmetries than are visible to the naked eye. But I don't know how to fish them. I mean, you need to have absolute control of the theory to be able to tell you, because you need to look at essentially all correlation functions. And I don't know how to look at all correlation functions.
Let's stop there and thank John May again.
Thank you.